Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Pod Strickland. I'm your host, Schwinnie Pooh. This is episode 134, I think, something like that. There's a lot of episodes. I lose count sometimes. But I am joined today by my co-host, Prez. That's at Presidente. I think he has many pseudonyms right now. I think he's Paywall P or some shit like that right now. Prez, what's going on?
I'm good. I'm still trying to recover from the game, which messed up my sleep schedule because I'm old. But it was a fun time, so it was worth it. Man. Look, I went to this beer garden near where I live, and then I had to bike back, and I just had so much adrenaline from the game that like it. I was up till like past midnight on a weekday, which for me is like a big no. So you know, it'll take me a couple of days, but fortunately, we're nearing the end of the week here.
Yeah, and let's just hope that the game tomorrow and on Sunday are a little less chaotic. But before we get into all that, we are joined by a special guest, his first time on the pod. His name is Chris Amundson. That's at KLA Hoops on Twitter. He is a co-host of the Bulls 101 podcast, and he is also a contributor at Premium Hoops NBA. Chris, what's going on?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, guys. And yeah, that Knicks game was I didn't have any investment in it, and I was still trying to recover myself.
There you go.
That was a game where, like, I consumed zero alcohol, and by the time it was done, I felt like I had consumed a lot of alcohol. Like I had at least had, you know, 8 beers, but I didn't. Anyway, before we get started, I have to do the thing. The Strickland has a Patreon now. You can find it at patreon.com/thestrickland or on our homepage at thestrick.land. Pod Strickland on Monday is still free. Draft Strickland is free. I just hopped on that this week with Prez and Theo. And there will probably and Alex, Zach, and mattsmail.mag is still free. There will also be another podcast added to the lineup at some point. Things that are changing this podcast, Pod Strickland on Friday, as well as my mailbag with Jeremy, that will be available only to Patreon subscribers for the $6 tier and above. If you want to hear me yell about more things, you can get that if you subscribe to the $9 Patreon tier or above. The real sell with that is you get exclusive weekly articles from Jack Huntley and Matthew Miranda. Jack wrote a very, very lovely piece this week to open about the Knicks season ahead. If you want even more access to us, you can join the $15, $30, $50, or $100 tiers, which include a ton of benefits, which include watch parties sitting in on pod recordings, guest appearances on pods, and you could even host a pod where you can tell me and Prez how much we suck. No matter what, we appreciate your support. If you are a Patreon subscriber or not, listening through this all has helped us get to this point. So thank you so much. And before we get started, I would just like to wish a very happy birthday to Zan Rosen. Hope this Knicks season is the best one yet. Love, Zoe. Thank you for listening, Zan. And you should thank your girlfriend for having us do a little shout-out for you here on the pod. But yeah, hope it was a good birthday. And you celebrated big with the Knicks win, buddy. Have a good one. So the Knicks, they won a basketball game. It was an interesting basketball game. Things happened. 138-134 on opening night in double overtime. It was a game they should have won. Then it was a game that they somehow managed to not win. Turned into a game that they maybe should have lost. And then they still somehow came out on top. So all's well that ends well. Prez, you can start. You can take it wherever you want because a lot of things happen in this basketball game.
Yeah. Man, I don't even know where to start. So I guess the thing that jumps out to me across the course of the game is the versatility of the team and the flexibility of Tibbs, which is not something I said a lot last year. You know, the Knicks obviously made some acquisitions. They have depth. It's probably their biggest strength aside from Julius Randle. So they could theoretically take different configurations to match up with different teams. And the big question is, would they do that? You know, last year was all about laying the foundation on offense and defense. They didn't really switch up coverages. They didn't really throw curveballs on offense. It was pretty much just Julius and spot up shooting and Derrick Rose magic, and that was it. But, you know, we saw a whole bunch of stuff, like the dynamism of the new team, you know, like a two-man game with Fournier and Randall. You got Randall, Mitchell Robinson pick and rolls. You got RJ Randall pick and rolls. You got small ball with Obi and Randall with, you know, Randall in drop coverage. You have trapping with aggressive coverage with Randall at the five. So, like, that's like more variety in one game than we saw in like the whole of fucking all last season. So
well, it was
hard to keep up with.
And even though we were shorthanded, like we saw us multiple times last year when we were shorthanded, and he still never went to Obi and Randall, right? Like it was, I think there was a game against, was it the Pelicans? He fucking played Norvell Pell at the five. Like he did not want to do Julius and Obi stuff, and
he didn't trust Obi.
Yeah, like, I mean, look, I said it when we saw it in that final preseason game. It didn't strike me as nothing. Like, I know we were shorthanded. It's the final preseason game. Take Tibbs at his word. Everything matters to him. Everything matters to him. He's not bullshitting you when he says that. And I thought it said something, and I thought he experimented with it for a reason. I think that reason may have just been that they had, like, they probably knew that Taj's significant other was expecting. And that he might miss a game or two or however long he wants to take off, and that they would need to do this because Noel is going to be out right now too. I don't think that was a mistake or it was a coincidence. I think they did that with an eye on this. And guess what? Like, I mean, look, we've only seen it in two games basically now, but I mean, they've looked really fucking good when they've gone with that lineup. I like that lineup creates like an frenzy to the game. Like it just got like fucking the pace of the game picked up like crazy. I mean, Obi, this guy in the open court is like fucking Usain Bolt or some shit. He was just filling the lane. He's scoop layups, you know. It was ridiculous watching him. And yeah, like there was just like both times against the Wizards, we saw this in that final preseason game too, but like they just make the game fast and you get caught up in the pace. And like, I don't think Boston didn't want to play a fast game. Like they didn't want to get into a running game, and we turned it into a running game. And the fact that we can turn games into like sprints and actually have the horses to compete with that.
We can never,
yeah, I mean, that's a welcome change
of
pace for me.
We could never get in a shootout. Like it's just not a thing that was the Knicks were able to do last year. Like unless, like, no, we just couldn't. We just didn't have the personnel. Like, it's just not the universe of possible types of three-point shots and transition baskets that you need to really get into an offensive firepower fight. It's just not something the Knicks had. So it was just jarring, man. Like, I'm sure, Chris, I'm sure you're, like, going through some of that, like, with the Bulls' new acquisitions. But, like, I'm just like, oh, shit, like, our team can do some stuff now, and it's not just one guy, right? It's not just LaVie, it's not just Randall, and it's just, it's going to take a couple games for me to get used to that.
And just one last thing, too, before I turn it over to Chris to get his thoughts, but, like, I thought what was really, like, we've been talking about, obviously, all offseason, you talk about the same shit over and over again, right? Like, one thing that I thought I think a lot of people probably lost in the shuffle is, like, it wasn't just RJ that could get better. It wasn't just Quickly that could get better. It wasn't just Mitch coming back. Like, Obi could obviously get better, and he has. I know it's really early, but, like, I mean, he's just playing. He's making things happen. And yesterday in that game, like, last year, it was a lot of him trying to, like, float around and find the space and make himself available and just find ways to chip in where he could. And yesterday, like, he legit took that game over for a stretch. I mean, after the game, I look it up. He only had 14 points, but I swear that 14 points felt like a fucking avalanche. Like it just happened so fast. And you know, I mean, he was awesome. He had some really good defensive possessions yesterday. And that's really the biggest thing is like you know, you can't run that OB Julius lineup just because the offense is good. Like, the defense has to hold up. And I like what that lineup is, yeah, you are sacrificing for some rim protection, but you can be a lot more aggressive, I think, in how you handle pick and rolls, how you're operating on the perimeter. I don't think it's a, you know, I don't personally think it's a coincidence, again, that they were able to get out in transition, partially because they were forcing more turnovers. So, yeah, I mean, I think, like, the OB improvement possibility is something all of us are probably guilty of sleeping on a little bit. So, yeah, anyway, Chris, what were your thoughts on, you know, kind of what you saw in the fourth? Because I think you said you only were able to tune into the fourth quarter, end of the fourth quarter, and then the overtimes. But a lot happened in that time.
Yeah, a lot of turnovers and three-pointers.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. As you guys mentioned, I only got to catch the end of the fourth quarter and then a couple of overtimes because I, on the other hand, was stressing about the Rock fight going on in Detroit between the Bulls and Pistons. But it's fun to hear you guys excited about the different lineups that you can run, the transition buckets that are now available to you, the offensive firepower that's provided. I mean, obviously, Evan Fournier was just completely bonkers in that overtime period. I think he hit, was it two or three threes in a row that just got MSG just lit up. And I love the videos that came out this morning of all the Knicks fans outside talking about RJ Barrett, you know, locking up Jason Tatum. And it's just so much fun when I think this is one of the reasons I wanted to come on is there's been some animosity, it seems like, between the Bulls and the Knicks fans recently because of, you know, the national rankings, the national perception of these two different teams. But I really think the NBA benefits when these teams are good, and we've both lived in an expectation of just, you know, overwhelming and continual pain for the last several years, that it's just so nice to have that refreshing view and have some hope about your team. And so it's fun to hear you guys' energy talking about, you know, OB having some growth there and having Fournier and Kemba Walker come in and take some of that load off Julius Randle, watching RJ Barrett, you know, blossom before your eyes and become more than that defensive presence, but that offense, watching that grow. And it's just really exciting. So I love that game. You know, Boston is a good litmus test for the Knicks, I think. I feel like the Knicks, the Bulls, the Celtics, the Heat, the Pacers, you know, kind of in this middle of the pack of the Eastern Conference that we're not really sure where they're going to end up, but there's a lot of talent there and a lot of optimism from the fan base. So it was just fun to watch. And I do wish, I just, rather than turn the game on, I'm not sure who Kemba Walker was guarding at the end of that fourth. You guys are up three. He's guarding Marcus Smart on the wing. And then for some reason, he turns around and looks like he's going to have to dive towards the basket, like he's going to prevent a dunk or something. You're like, dude, you're up three. There's 3 seconds left. Just keep on your man. And so when I saw that, I was like, oh, no, the Knicks, they can't be doing this. And then obviously the two overtimes were so much fun to watch. So that was really enjoyable. A great first game to watch. And I mean, you, as you guys mentioned, you saw the growth of the team and the versatility that I think that depth is one of the strengths of the Knicks this season, is there aren't any players that you guys are playing that are not quality NBA rotation players, you know, and you couldn't say that last year in some respects.
Yeah. And like, it's not just, it's also the versatility to, like, it's fundamentally changing the lineups you can play in. Like last year, I mean, you're a Bulls fan, so I'm sure you know this. Tibbs has always been kind of willing to like mix and match on the perimeter positions. Like he likes playing two guards together. He'll do two guards and a wing. He'll do a guard and two wings. You know, he's like willing to try that out. But the four and five for him are like, you know, those are like sacred positions for him. but like the fact, like, again, it's just like so awesome to see Obi, who, look, let's be real. Like a lot of times I thought it in my head. I know a lot of Knicks fans probably thought it in their head at the time or at various points last season where you're like, holy shit, did we just draft like another guy in the lottery who's going to be a non-factor and isn't doing anything? And for him, again, it's one game, it's very early on, but to like see the stuff he's being able to do, which unlocks the ability to play Julius at the five, which is something we were all clamoring for at times last year. That's really, really positive to see. And it's even more positive to see because, I mean, Chris, I know you would agree with this. Tibbs is not giving out those minutes, like, it's not like some charity thing. Like, Like, it doesn't matter what game it is. You've got to earn the right to get those minutes in that rotation. And for Obi to get that says something. I do want to get back a little bit more to this game and specifics, a couple of things. You mentioned RJ Barrett's defense on Tatum, people screaming about it. I thought his defense, I mean, look, you can ask Prez. I've been probably higher on his defense since last year than maybe like anybody in the entire world other than his parents. But like, I just think he's such an underrated defensive player because he does not make splashy plays. He does not, you know, he's not like crashing down from the weak side and swatting somebody at the rim. He is just so good at being a robot and executing boring rotations, tagging the roll man, getting back out to the shooter,
not biting on fakes, like
yeah. Exactly. Closing out without fouling, stuff like that. Like, he's so good at that, and it was just nice to see him up against an elite perimeter scorer like Jason Tatum. He's a guy I've been slandered by my Knicks brethren this offseason for my shameless Celtics standing. But like, I think Jason Tatum has so much potential. I really think he could be an MVP caliber player. And look, he averaged 27 a game last year. Like, the guy's a big time scorer already. Yes, did Tatum miss shots he makes? Of course he did. But like, part of that is because of RJ Barrett's defense. Like, he made him uncomfortable. He couldn't get to the rim at will. He had to work hard to get shots off. And he's just a big body. Like, you can't just like bully him easily or at all. And like, he's really, really good. And I think the biggest compliment I can give him on that game yesterday is, look, this is a guy that averaged 18 points per game basically last year. He was either the second or third option, depending on how you want to read things. They added Kemba Walker. They added Evan Fournier. He's clearly moved down the offensive hierarchy at least one spot, if not two spots. He barely got touches in the first half. I think he got like three shots up in the first half. Didn't make any. To stay in the game, to stay with it, and not let it impact your commitment defensively and how you compete and all that kind of stuff, like, that's really impressive, I think, for a young player who is still, you know, RJ Barrett has made it pretty obvious on the things he's worked on, you know, like his ball handling, pull-up shooting, that kind of stuff. He wants to show that off, and I'm sure over the course of the season he'll get a chance to, but to not get frustrated and to stay with it and then really come through big in the second half. I mean, he had 14 points in the third quarter, a big layup in the second overtime, and he hit a huge three in the first overtime, right, like with Jason Tatum literally giving him no airspace. It was a very, very impressive three. But to do all that, and like, I can't say enough about, like, there are a lot of guys that say they want to win, but they want to win on their terms. They want to win playing how they want to play in the role they want to play in. And there's one guy like that in Philadelphia who's acting like a massive baby right now. But like, I just think it says so much about RJ Barrett that since he's coming to the NBA, he's dispelled so many misconceptions I and many other people have had about him. And really just been like willing to play the role that his coaches are asking him to play and what his team needs him to do.
Yeah. And exceeding those roles. He was great off ball in the sense that he's in the right place at the right time. Like you said, not generating events. That was his job last year. Reggie Bullock took the big perimeter threats, even though he's a little smaller than RJ. But this year, they're switching it up. They're a little bigger because Evan Fournier is sneakily tall, taller than RJ Barrett, actually. And he's not athletic, but he's also not skinny either. So they're letting him do the role of be large and in the way off ball instead of RJ, and letting RJ actually chase guys, whether it's Brad. We saw him, you know, lock up Brad Beal in preseason, and that involved running around 9,000 screens.
And we saw him give Brad the business last year a little bit too.
Yeah. When the few opportunities he did have to match up with guys like Brad and Kawhi, he held his own. Those guys are going to get you no matter what, but he held his own. Kawhi definitely gave RJ, I'm pretty sure that was the worst, like, I don't know if RJ's really been in on a poster aside from that Kawhi one, but Kawhi.
It was funny though, because he got Kawhi gave him the business at MSG. That was the first time we played him. But the second time we played them, Kawhi tried to, like, bully him again, and he just didn't get anywhere. And he was like, wait, like, this isn't supposed to happen. You're not LeBron. You're not Giannis. What's going on here?
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, it was clear that, like, RJ was learning some of the tricks of the trade, and we'll see how it goes, you know, throughout the year. There's so many different kinds of scorers, and, you know, like, I was just thinking about it. Like, even the guys RJ trains with Drew Hanlon, like, the three big names are Brad Beal, Jason Tatum, Zach LaVine. So we've seen him up against two of those guys. At some point, we'll play the Bulls, and he'll have to deal with Zach LaVine, which is a whole nother kind of monster. And, like, all those guys are way different. So, like, we're really going to see how he does versus all these different players. And it'll just be real interesting to see how he holds up. Obviously, it's not just him, right? It's team ball. Like, he has help from other guys. He has help from Mitchell Robinson and whatever. So, like, it's not just purely one-on-one, but it's one of the storylines that I'm just fascinated to see. When guys are in different defensive roles, it's just kind of a thing that really interests me. And that's also one of the reasons why I was excited to have Chris on the pod, because with all the new acquisitions in the Bulls, and we'll get to them in a little bit, but like, some of those guys are playing different roles on defense now that they have the structure, and I'm just curious to see how it unfolds.
You guys mentioned with the departure, obviously, of sorry, I just forgot his name. Reggie Bullock,
who took most, guy.
Well, but he, you know, he took on the bulk of your point of attack assignments last year, as you mentioned, and RJ Barrett stepping into that role. If he can be consistent, as you guys said, you don't have to be. I mean, honestly, a lot of the best defenders in the NBA are just steady, and you know, a lot of the things that they do just don't show up right. Just they're in the right position, they're big, they're in the way, they navigate screens correctly. Those things are huge, and if RJ Barrett can do that effectively and funnel guys to your great rim protectors, your defense is going to hold up. I know, you know, adding Fournier and Walker, and obviously Derrick Rose, none of them are really defensive stalwarts at the point of attack. So, you know, you guys mentioned RJ's changing role this year and the role that he's going to have to accept. They're going to rely on him a lot, I think, at the point of attack to kind of make up some ground on that end. And if he can just be steady there, I think you're going to see a really, really, you know, short or minimal drop off on your defensive coverages. And if you can keep running these different lineups and give teams different looks, you know, that's a great way to just maintain your defense. You guys mentioned Jason Tatum tonight, or I'm sorry, last night, just being made uncomfortable by RJ Barrett. I mean, and we know Jason Tatum doesn't have like the greatest shot selection in the first place, but he has made his career off bad shot selection and just great rhythm. He just gets a great rhythm and he just knocks down these buckets. So, you know, as much pressure as you can put on him, as little space as you can give him as he's going around screens and things, you know, that's going to be the unsung parts of your defense that RJ Barrett can really infect and affect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are we going to sing it?
I look,
sing a little praise of RJ Barrett, you know?
Right.
Figure this is the right place.
He's just been like it's just, it's kind of crazy, like thinking about initial thoughts of him at Duke and then like rookie year and then now. He's just a very, very impressive young pro in the NBA. But enough RJ Barrett praise. There are other things to talk about. I do want to talk a little bit about, like, I don't even know what to make of it, but Kemba Walker turning into, like, it was like the ghost of Dennis Smith Jr. possessed him down the stretch of the fourth quarter, where he was just like pissing the ball away in the most bizarre ways. I just couldn't believe some of the turnovers he had. He had one on an inbounds where he just decided to like lob it towards the backcourt for no apparent reason.
It was just like the ghosts of all Knicks point guards of the last like 20 years.
It
just
was
like
insane. It was fitting
tribute.
Exactly.
It was fucking bananas. Like he had another one where on the broadcast, you could literally hear Van Gundy, because it was like, I forget, we were up four with, I think we got the ball with 34 seconds or 44 seconds left. And Van Gundy was like, they should just dribble, just milk the clock. Like, you don't need to do anything here. Just milk the clock. Even if you don't get a shot, even if you don't get a good shot up, it's fine. And almost like as soon as he said that, Kemba tries to throw this absurd pass to Julius, who's like, has his back to the basket and trying to get the ball from at the top of the key, which is fine, except Jaylen Brown is like basically in front of him, infesting the passing lane. And for some reason, Kemba decides to throw it. Then he had that. Then right after that, he had the one where he dribbles the ball up and like for some reason tries to throw a jump pass. And like it was just bananas. I'm going to assume some of that. He looked like his feet weren't underneath him all the way yesterday. His handle was like sharp, but it looked like his body wasn't ready for it enough yet. So I'm just going to chalk it up to a lot of like nerves and first game weirdness and stuff. But like, I mean, look, ultimately you could still at least see some of the, yeah, he can pull up, shoot from three, and what that could do when he starts pulling that more frequently. Because yesterday he was doing a way too much like, you know, he was just being a check down quarterback yesterday. Like, oh, I'm just going to get the ball to Julius and then clear the side out. And like, it was too much of that. He needs to be more of a factor, I think, in terms of just be more decisive and be more willing to just run the show. Because ultimately, like, that's why they got him here. They got him here to make the game easier for Julius and RJ and all these guys. So, you know, that's what he has to do. I don't know if you have thoughts of beyond that, Prez, because I really don't.
Not really. I think he's definitely getting his legs under him. You could tell in preseason, you know, he wasn't all the way there. Because the Knicks, you know, they don't slow roll in the preseason, right? They were one of the few teams doing two-a-days. They're one of the few teams that were playing starters minutes, and Tibbs starters minutes, not even regular starters minutes, in the preseason. And, you know, he's one of the guys, along with Mitch, who I think their conditioning is still a little behind where it'll eventually need to get to. And they can get away with it because of D-Rose, fortunately. I think it was... It was definitely noticeable, but I'm like, it is what it is. I'm not really tripping over it. He's still, like you said, he still showed the flashes of. There was one play in particular where he broke the fuck out of somebody's ankles, but then like
he like collapsed, like when he was like going to take the mid range shot, right?
No, it was a different one where he was going up for a layup, and it was just Robert. It was like the easiest block of Robert Williams' life. Like I was like, man, I could punch that shit. Like it was with my 15 inch vert.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not sure I buy that.
I get a fingertip on it. All right, man. So, like, it would that's when I was like, okay, he doesn't have his legs under him. Because, like, yeah, he doesn't, you know, Kemba's not, nobody's going to confuse him with Zach LaVine finishing. But he's, like, he just didn't get off the ground that much. So, that's just, it'll come. I'm not really worried. It was kind of weird, though. I will say that. The brain farts were weird, that is, not the conditioning.
Could I ask you guys a question about Kemba?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just wanted to know, you know, as you said, you brought him in here to kind of help take the load off of Julius. I know you guys did go 4-0 in the preseason. How have you seen Kemba's integration to the offense? And do you think it's working as intended, or what kind of wrinkles is Tibbs implementing?
So it's kind of interesting. I actually, even they went off in the first preseason game. But like I said it at the time, I thought they didn't really like do a good job of creating a bunch of shots for each other. It was just like Kemba was playing well, Randall was playing well, Fournier played well. It was just like they all happened to be playing well, but they weren't necessarily like playing well and flowing together. I actually think our best off preseason performance was the second game against Washington, and Randall missed that. And I think Randall being out like actually made it easier for Kemba, because he doesn't have to like there's no like balancing act, right? Like it's just like, oh, okay, Randall's out, so like I got to do all the initiation and like we go from there. Whereas all the games they've played together, I think there's been this weird like thing where Kemba's trying not to step on his toes. And it's like being way too deferential, actually. So I think that's just something they need to work on, but like you can see the flashes of it. And here's the thing, like Fournier and Randall, I can already see like they're going to be awesome together. Like they're, he was awesome with Bullock last year, and Bullock cannot do
that. They look like they were playing together for like 10 years, dude. Yeah. That shit was crazy.